oversee all procurement for different agencies. There are different CPOs for different agencies. They are looking at doing a what they call a vendor portal to make the disclosure process easier and streamline it so that vendors go in, they register, they kind of fill out a standard form, template, what have you, for their disclosures, and could update it through the portal, and every agency could maybe draw from the same portal. They're still under development with that, but we're hopeful that they can come online with it next year, because that would be very helpful for us too in the disclosure process. But there's definitely still some added time in the procurement process that didn't exist in the last tollway program.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And I think this was part of the concern expressed going into this year. But clearly from the numbers, you figured out some ways to deal with that successfully, and it sounds like you learned some lessons in the process that will help you be even better at it next year. So we'll have huge expectations for next year.
Yes. Yeah. I will say it's not getting worse. It is getting better. We did make progress.
Thank you.
One final slide.
Can we talk a little bit? I'm sorry.
Sure.
We didn't really touch as much on the IDOT prequalification. So I think one thing that we heard from smaller firms was that, sometimes the requirement for prequals on certain projects were difficult, but also didn't always seem to them to make much sense. So can we talk a little bit about what we're considering?
I think I'm going to have skipped my talking points on that, because now that you mention it, I don't recall kind of reading from the script.
Uh-huh.
So we said that we launched the small business set aside phase of the small business initiative. Firms must generate revenues of $10 million or less and be registered with the state's chief procurement office in order to bid and set aside projects, which generally have contract values of $1 million or less. For off-system work, set-aside projects may also waive IDOT prequalification requirements, which have been an obstacle for small firms seeking to participate in tollway contracts as primes. Three set-asides were offered in 2013. So what we found to be a consistent feedback, informal feedback from the industry and from the small minority-owned firms, women-owned businesses, is that the way that IDOT prequalification works, it is not set up for smaller firms, and that's something historically with the agency. It poses a number of impediments for smaller firms to be prequalified in an appropriate manner. And while there's been some progress under Secretary Schneider to that regards, there's still some work to be done on that account. So in order to ameliorate that somewhat, at least on the short-term basis, what we have discussed is on those projects where there is the liability to the tollway is somewhat limited by or safe from the standards of not being on roadway work, we've, in lieu of asking for IDOT prequalification from the prime on the area of work that he's supposed to be performing, we are beefing up the specification requirements in connection with the experience of the firm. So even though we're not necessarily, we're waiving that requirement at set-aside projects, we're still trying to be safe and have the tollway in mind, first and foremost, on the safety of the projects.
So just if I could walk through what I understand, and somebody can correct me on this, but my understanding was on the pre-qualification process, sometimes it would require, in order to be pre-qualified, which was necessary to do a certain type of work, a firm would have to demonstrate that they had a history of doing that work for
as primes
for X period of years. Well, obviously, if you're first time trying to break into this work, you're not going to have that.
Or even if you've done it but as a sub.
Even if you've done it as a sub, you're not going to have that experience as a prime. So, what we're just, again, doing in a very small, kind of isolated way to see how it works is this off-system work, where, as Gustavo mentioned, a little less maybe onerous and certainly less dangerous from the tollways perspective, looking at, giving these firms opportunities to maybe do something that they've done as a sub hundreds of times, as a prime, by waiving the pre-qualification requirement in this very limited area. We, are trying to balance wanting to provide these opportunities with, as you mentioned, the safety and our desire to make sure the work gets done correctly. So
exactly. And I know there's a little bit of a jump for our engineers, a leap of faith. I've seen it done elsewhere. I know it works when it's done consciously, when your specs reflect exactly the requirements that you're expecting from the contractor. And truth be told, bonding, if you're able to bond a project, that's a much better sign as to whether you're going to be able to, your assets succeeding are there or not. The pre-qualification is a snapshot on time, period. That's all it is. So it's not as effective of a measure. Not necessarily is not, not that it's not helpful. It's just not as effective as a measure of the contractor's ability to do the work as it is his capacity to produce that bond. If he produces that performance bond, that's a much better way of gauging that, especially on these smaller projects. So we think we're going to be okay on that account. And I know that for some of Paul's folks, that's a little bit of a nerve-wracking sometimes, but we get there. We actually provide a project already with our pre-qualification.
Paul's been very committed to trying it out. I wanted to point it out particularly because I wanted the board to have an opportunity to know we were doing that, but also any ideas or feedback that you have, we'll certainly report back to you with what we find. If it turns into a big problem and we're seeing that companies can't then perform the work, you know, we're going to have to revisit it, I think.
Yeah, I think the alternative appears to be that if you haven't done this kind of work before, you can't do it in the future for us. is not a very good way to bring more people to the table. And I think this is worth a try.
Yeah. Calculated risk. So we said earlier that we were looking at possible ways of complementing some of the technical assistance on some of the initiatives that we have launched. This year, under the leadership of Mike Kosh and John Hawk, give them all the credit. I just been somewhat of a sideliner on this, helping my own way. But for the past year, the finance department has been investigating the costs and benefits associated with adopting an owner-controlled insurance program, or OCIP. An OCIP is a consolidated insurance program which is secured by a program sponsor in lieu of requiring construction contractors to secure and maintain insurance for their on-site construction activities. The types of insurance typically included in an OCIP include workers' comp, commercial general liability, and excess liability. These contractors that participate in an OCIP provide an insurance credit by eliminating insurance costs from their bid. Thus, OCIP costs are funded by the reduction in construction costs. In 2013, the TOWI completed an OCIP feasibility study to assess the implementation of such program for insuring one or more construction projects comprising the MOVE Illinois Capital Program. Results of the study reveal the following benefits of adopting OCIP for selected MOVE Illinois projects. First of all, comprehensive coverage tailored to individual projects, increased opportunity for DMBWBs, as we will cover later, seems to be supported by our small contractor survey results. We already covered that earlier. So centralized claims management, avoidance of inadequate contractors insurance coverage issues, and potential cost savings and reduced litigation. We have released the RFP for insurance broker services to include managing the procurement of an insurance policy for the tollway, insurance administration, handling claims, and implementing safety training. 5 bids were submitted for this RFP, and 4 are currently under review as one of them is non-responsive. If we are to move forward with implementation of the OCIP, possibly the Elgin O'Hare might be a strong first candidate to be considered for the program. We hope to expand the OCIP to include additional projects in the future. Again, we would like to open the floor for discussion on this exciting new opportunity program.
So it is possible, is it not, Mike, that we could structure it in such a way that the winning contractor does pay some fee, for instance, for coverage through this program, if we were so inclined?
Yes, I mean, the RFP that we're currently is really to secure brokerage services that will assist not only with securing proposals, but also in program design. So there are issues like how might you structure the compensation for the program that can be accommodated within, accommodated with, through their work with us in terms of how best to not only acquire the coverages, but fund the program.
So where diversity comes in again is in that if a program of this magnitude will be is implemented, we know that DBEs, MBEs, and WBEs will be benefited because they have express insurance being one of the potential obstacles to them. Some of the insurance coverage is prohibitive in cost, and obviously by eliminating that factor in their bids, it would provide additional encouragement to submit work for the bids on the WBE.
Gustavo, would we see this as a program, kind of a bridging program, in a sense where this would be made available for those that need it to move forward, but that we would anticipate that if they were successful in one or two projects or whatever, that they then might be able to leave the nest and acquire that kind of coverage themselves?
These kinds of programs, much like the small contractor bridge program with the Illinois Finance Authority, there's exactly that's what they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be a nest type of program where once the company has developed that capacity, has also demonstrated they're capable of performing work as primes, that they're able to go back and just be part of the regular market without having to necessarily use that those tools again.
So I would add, Gustavo, that the programs are typically designed around a project, and include it isn't specifically targeted to. We're providing an umbrella type coverage or by the owner for certain firms. The coverage for the entire insurance for all of the contractors that fall within that,
right, including DBEs, MBEs, and WBEs.
So.
But Mike, would you see a likelihood that the participants of the project succeeded, the individual contractors,
it provides them an opportunity to get in to
create a route or a ramp up to where they could deal with that?
I think it provides for them to get over some of the hurdles to get the experience in that project,
right,
that would allow them to demonstrate to others that they were able to manage,
right,
those issues.
So. It is a balance. We'll have to be very mindful as we move forward. We don't want to remove any incentive from, you know, larger contractors that are able to get this coverage from performing well or you know, all of those things that factor into the insurance rates that they get, right? Any other feedback on that, or anyone who has? We've seen some models of using this in other states, I think, and other areas, but any feedback on this? We can certainly look at, we're not locked, just because we're doing the RFP right now for the broker doesn't mean we're locked into doing it if we don't get competitive rates, so.
Yeah, I mean, one of the additional information we expect to get through the brokerage firm is the, you know, the economic viability of the program. We have the preliminary study done, and that seemed to indicate that we were well positioned to be able to manage a program like this, and that there was economic potential to, you know, that could benefit the towing in terms of the overall cost. But the broker will have to help review those issues as well.
So now on to our third and final part of this presentation. Workforce development. The goal is to establish or enhance efforts to foster workforce development in order to increase construction career opportunities to historically underemployed individuals. An update on our workforce development programs in 2013 include the Earned Credit Program, or ECP. For most of you, you might already know, but I will say it again, we'll repeat it again just to make sure that we cover that. The Earned Credit Program is a rewards initiative that allows contractors and subcontractors to earn bid credits for future tollway construction bids when they hire from a pool of qualified, pre-screened, and historically underemployed job candidates, including underemployed or unemployed African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, women, ex-offenders, and veterans. We have strategic partnerships encouraged through the Earned Credit Program, through our Earned Credit Program Advisory Council, which includes prime contractors and subcontractors, union reps, and community partners. Their mission is to promote the ECP program, refer candidates for hiring by contractors, and identify candidates' training needs to and foster union partnerships. The iWork program. The iWork program is intended to encourage contractors to hire workers with construction skills living in the vicinity of moving Illinois projects and provide a financial incentive to provide contractors and subcontractors that opt to hire local residents from areas within historic unemployment or underemployment. The TOWI will reimburse participating contractors a portion of the hourly wages, $10 per hour paid to eligible employees. This is a race and gender neutral initiative, and right now the iWork program is primarily centered as a pilot program on our 294-57 corridor. The next slide speaks a little bit about the performance on both ECP and the iWork program. So, I look at the 2013 performance of workforce development programs. The Earned Credit Program, so far the TOWI has invested approximately $830,000 since the inception of the ECP, and this has yielded an estimated return on investment of over $6.5 million in wages. ECP has also produced active contractor certificates valued at more than $1.8 million currently. The council now includes 21 new members covering more communities and constituencies served by the TOWI than ever before. More than 163 ECP workers have been hired since the program started in 2007, including an estimated 46 hires of the 163 in 2013 alone. And as of November this year, more than 150 bids out of 254, or over 60%, of all bids submitted have used ECP credits. Increased participation in the program is illustrated in the next slide.
So you can see as our program is ramped up and there are more opportunities, obviously more people are being hired. So, but it has taken some time to build to this.
To this point, to this level.
So
a closer look at the ECP program. These percentages represent the number of bids per year that have included ECP credits. Please keep in mind that the size of the capital program varies each year. However, the chart clearly shows a growth pattern that we intend to continue encouraging through 2014 and beyond. I also did a quick calculation over this number of years of the total number of bids submitted to the TOWI, how many included ECP credits. 52% included. So this is a pretty successful program. I think one of the reasons we received the Rosa Parks Award earlier this year from Women in Transportation is precisely the innovative nature of the program. So we are very proud of it, and we continue finding ways or looking for ways to make it more effective.
So the iWork program, and I know we're running a little short on time, but the iWork program was the one that we established for 294-57, right? Gustavo was a pilot, so this is more of a community.
It's more of a community hiring type of thing.
And can kind of see here that there have been a large volume of applications and the number of people who have provided work opportunities from those now 11 zip codes around that project. You know, it's had some modest success. None of these are going to be overnight thousands of people employed, but there's been some modest success. I think one thing that we'd like to see is how this program ends up working out over the course of the next year, right?
Right, exactly. We intend to continue it next year, and our expectation is that the program is going to grow. The program was launched fairly late in the construction season in 2013, so I think that was one of the reasons that the numbers don't look as good as we think that they could. But we're pretty optimistic that in 2014 we're going to do better than that. So we're going to continue.
And it's still a good, you know, when you look at how the Earned Credit Program ramped up, it's still, a good
beginning. I think so.
I'll just voice my concern on this. I think the Earned Credit Program is an excellent way to go about trying to achieve our end goals. I think when you get into a specific community hiring situation in construction, you're actually, and I dare you to take a long-term look at it, are having a negative impact on long-term career-like advancement of minority candidates. Because you're saying, I'm only good for this job, and I've reached a skill level now with the contractors, I'm getting to where we want to get, and now I can't travel through the next community.
Yeah. No, you
it's
have
a very dangerous thing to get into it.
One of the ways we think we can ameliorate some of that is by trying to link the candidates that are going through iWork through our ECP program so that we can continue providing incentives to contractors to keep those folks on board for future projects of, let's say, 294-57, take them on to other projects. I think that will be one way of encouraging retention.
But I think it's a good point and something that we'll keep in mind. I mean, obviously we heard a lot of feedback on the 294-57 project that people were concerned there weren't going to be any folks from that community working on that project. And so this was developed to see what we could do to impact that very specific concern for this specific project. But to create community hiring initiatives around each tollway project,
yeah,
I think is probably, you're right, not the way to, for the long term,
right,
really.
Long-term goal is, I believe, is because of, look at the community of construction is Northern Illinois. You have to be able to travel that area to have gainful employment long term in the industry. And there are apprenticeship programs, and there are also internal apprenticeship programs. You start as a laborer, unskilled level, and then you start working your way up through the company. And that takes time. The company will feel, you'll get some skill levels, and then you'll apply to an apprenticeship program for the operators or for the carpenters. But if you're constantly cycling people through the low unskilled level, that's not going to happen. And that's where I fear you need to look at it as a overall goals for the whole project.
Right.
That will succeed in the long term, getting what we want,
okay,
which is what we want is more minority participation at all levels of the church.
And to that point, we've engaged on very preliminary conversations with IDOT and one of the programs that they're sponsoring with a local not-for-profit agency in Chicago. I don't want to get into too much details on that because it's still very preliminary conversations, but they have made a significant investment on workforce development initiatives that may appear to be consistent with our goals on exactly what you're saying, how do we address employment system.
So let's take a takeaway from this conversation is definitely that we need to look in the long term. I think the Earn Credit program accomplishes that. Mm-hmm. It's yet to be determined whether this iWork program gets to that quite as effectively as the Earn Credit program does. So maybe, again, we'd like to see how iWork plays out over the next year, but thinking about maybe their partnerships with other agencies, IDOT is certainly a natural, and focusing more on one of the goals should be the long-term career in the trades versus, work for a couple years on a job and then not being able to grow.
And then overall, the other thing, again, looking at the big picture, subcontracting to minority contractors, which is one of our goals, and then the need to make sure those minority contractors are employing minorities. You have situations where you have a contractor that may have great minority participation, but he's subbing a portion of the work out to a minority contractor, and then we're having a negative impact on overall minority participation.
That's a good point.
Well, we'll look at that as well. I know that these are all long-standing issues, and some of it also has to do with the diversity of the work pool that any of these contractors can draw from, and so I agree we have to look at it at every level. We'll take a look at that issue of, I wonder if there's a way to incentivize, if there's great diversity in the workforce, is there a way to capture that or report on that or, give a contractor some credit for, their own diversity within their own workforce rather than just the diversity of the ownership.
I think I'm agreeing with Director Sweeney here, is I think that is a greater goal in some ways.
What is our greatest goal? I know we want to do as many things as possible, but you can do numerous things and overall impact negatively on what your overall goal is.
Right.
And in some of these instances, we've seen that. I think I could I can give examples.
And I, but I would say is that simply saying that we contracted with a minority-owned business, isn't that wonderful? What really was
Look at the impact?
Right. And if you're dealing with incentivizing employment and creating jobs for minority candidates, I think that's a greater goal. And that's we shouldn't be lulled into just being satisfied with the first instance.
Well, we'll give some thought to whether there is some way to either create an incentive or at least recognize diversity, even if the owner of the company is not a, you know, DB, MB, WB, or if they are, you know, the diversity of the workforce.
If they have an unusually high participation level of minorities,
right,
they should get some credit for that. It's another incentive, I think, for long-term employment in the industry, which is, again, I think our goal.
We'll give some thought to that.
And I just want to wrap up by just mentioning one more idea that we have for 2014, we've been talking to, Paul and I have been talking about exploring the revamping of the construction management internship program by possibly using a new approach that exposes candidates to construction management and various other engineering disciplines and by forging partnerships with area high schools and community colleges. So something we currently have something on our PSVs, but hasn't worked as well as we wished it had worked. So we're looking at revamping that program in a significant way and hopefully have some meaningful internships for people who want to pursue a career in engineering, primarily minority and women. So we're looking at how we can launch something in 2014 in that direction as well. So that pretty much wraps up the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we again, any more comments, ideas, suggestions, we'll be happy to take them and explore. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We had the other item that we wanted to look at today was the interchange planning and policy update.
We're trying to be brief on this as well. Just kind of want the intent is okay if I could just sit and walk through some of this stuff. The intent is to give you, first of all, I'll start with an update of some of our outreach activities that I've been doing in the past, but then give you a snapshot of what's been happening. We adopted a new interchange policy in 2012, as you recall. I want to kind of walk you through how that that policy is actually helping advance some of the projects along, get some other feedback about how we may be able to better measure some of the metrics of how well the policy is performing. So briefly on the corridor council and outreach updates, there's a lot happening. Really what we like to do is to let people know prior to construction what's happening, before it happens, and then just kind of tell them what we've done in the year prior. So we're going to focus in really January and into February some stakeholder and outreach along the I-90 corridor. We'll be doing some public meetings and sitting down with the business community and letting them know what the impacts will be throughout the I-90 corridor. Obviously, a lot of work happening out there. Elsinore O'Hare Western Access Project, aka 390. We continue to have our local advisory committee meetings. We meet pretty much once a month. We're taking December off, and we'll reconvene in January. That's really, the local advisory committee serves as a conduit to the community, let people know what's happening and when it's happening. We've been doing quarterly mayor's meetings. I think these are now very effective at making sure that the mayors understand where we are, and also getting updates from the mayors about what issues they're experiencing in construction, and updates as well as how they're proceeding along with identifying opportunities to close the funding gap. There's a corridor set of workshop that's being planned right now. We want to make sure that the Elgin O'Hare corridor is not just a big chunk of concrete in the middle of DuPage County. We want to make sure it actually is blends in well with the overall community. So there's an aesthetic workshop with the mayors January 24th that will be chaired by hosted by DuPage County. And then just to, as an update for you, you're going to start seeing many more intergovernmental agreements coming to the board over the next several months, several years. There's about 50 intergovernmental agreements overall that we will have for the Elgin O'Hare project for maintenance responsibilities, different components of the project that are being added on for right-of-way transfers and whatnot. So that's just an update. 294-57, we continue to do our outreach. Obviously that's well along in construction and people understand what's happening, when it's happening out there. But we do produce newsletters and brochures to let to provide that update. We're also doing some work with the local communities. I was actually meeting this afternoon on local technical assistance. It's nice that we're building the project, but we want to make sure that the communities are planning according and really getting the most of the economic development out of it. So there's a local technical assistance grant that CMAP is providing to local communities to identify what those opportunities are to develop the right type of developments that work well with the type of interchanges that we're building. And the 53-120 project, we continue to meet monthly with our finance committee. We're just really getting that off the ground. We've done our willingness to pay surveys. We've put those out on the street. I believe more than 100,000 went out. We received about 9,000 responses, 8,000 to 9,000 responses. We'll be doing more of a recap to you on everything going out of the 53-120 project sometime spring of 2014. So those are some of the outreach. But really the intent of today is to give you an update of where we are with the policy and tell you how the policy has actually helped move some of these projects along that have been maybe lingering, but some of the changes that were made to the policy have really fostered some ability to move these things along. Really overall what the policy did do, and we are hearing some feedback from people about it, really provided the clarity of what how to get a project moving forward, and then how it also identified opportunities to finance the project, how the locals could go about looking at how to finance the project, and also provide some more opportunities from the tollway standpoint of how we can look at different tolling options. Local participation is part of the project. We're seeing a lot of local communities, especially with the interchanges, now starting to acquire the right-of-way that we talked about that really is helps us out. And then what we're really seeing too is along the I-90 corridor, obviously we're in construction, they see that that's really spurred on a lot of urgency amongst these communities to start getting those I-90 projects moving forward. But with our policy that was adopted, it does provide some flexibility in the repayment term, so it allows the communities to plan accordingly from a financial standpoint as well to align themselves with our construction. When we put the policy out, if you recall, we went out for public comments. And that was an excellent suggestion. What that really did, we got comments back from many of the communities whose projects are now actually moving forward. And it was really just providing that little bit of additional clarity of what we can do to, again, align ourselves with what it takes to actually deliver it from a local standpoint. So we did make some modifications. The communities, as you'll see as I go along, communities of Schaumburg, Hoffman Estates, Boone County, Belvedere, Sugar Grove, they all provided comments, and those are the projects that seem to be now moving forward because, again, it provided that clarity and the incentive of what they had to do to get things done. So really, the overall goals of the policy were economic development, operational improvements, or congestion reduction, and a net return of revenue as we've decided. Originally, it was 10 years. We expanded it out to 10 to 15 years. Those are some of the primary things that we talked about with the policy. And you've seen variations of this map in the past, the three different colors. You've got the interchanges that have been complete since really 2007 when we adopted our initial policy. Those that are in progress or in construction right now. You can see many of those are actually happening right now, which is it's a great thing. Happening now or will be happening as part of between now and 2016. And others that are still on the potential block that are starting to move forward. A couple of notes that I want to talk about here of how this our changes to the policy have really helped move them along. I'll start with one at Irene Road and Genoa Road. That is up at the kind of the top left, the two yellow boxes there. What the policy did introduce new flexibilities and again provide that clarity. Locals have been gone out and acquired the right of way. As we've said, you know, you go out and take the onus. They bought right of way to accommodate the projects. They're working with the local landowners to buy the land. They've taken the onus of doing the upfront engineering work. So they're really doing a lot of that upfront late work. But that was something that we didn't have before. Is the direction to that they would get credit if they bought the land, but actually there would be a positive incentive if they got the land. So that was one thing that's really helped, and Boone County and Belvedere have been actively acquiring land around the interchange to protect it to move the project forward. What the new policy also brought some ability, which around looking at more of a corridor-wide approach. We're looking at both Genoa Road and Irene Road and trying to balance out the tolls there, get more toll equity between the two. Genoa Road, right now it's an untold move. There are some free movements around Genoa Road. We're getting support from the local communities in the county to close up a free movement and using some of the funding to help close out the funding gap for the Irene Road interchange. So collectively, we're able to now look at not just a standalone project, but look at a little bit broader scope and a corridor tolling approach that provides the equity that we've always talked about, and balancing the traffic and the tolling. And then one of the other provisions that was brought into the new policy is the time frame consideration of repayment. This is a rural area. Growth is going to be slow. Traffic is always going to be lighter out in these areas. In particular, this area, it's very rural out here, but you've got Belder, Chrysler plant that's out there, and they're trying to garner some additional economic development in Boone County and around Belvedere. So we allowed the provision for a 15-year return of net return on the revenue to fund the project. So that also is helping to, again, provide the path to move this long-standing project forward. So you'll see some agreements coming up likely in the spring within the next couple months, late winter, spring, for the to move the Irene Road Interchange project forward. So the policy has absolutely helped move that one forward, and they're doing what they need to do from a local standpoint, allows us to gain the benefits during construction, then buying the right-of-way. We've been using the right-of-way during construction for our material storage, and we've got concrete plants on one of the quadrants, so it's providing benefits to us. Another project where the policy has clearly helped move things forward, the policy in our construction of I-90 has definitely spurred on some emergency, is at Barrington Road. Barrington Road has been a long talk about project. Again, some changes and modifications in the policy. We did receive some comments back on the policy from Hoffman Estates. What we've changed in the policy, we looked at the project a little bit differently if they were involved multiple agencies, or if there's a regional, a broader regional benefit, which this I-90 Barrington Road project is, it's a strategic regional arterial, so a main arterial route, it's a commercial truck route. There's some benefits from an operational standpoint. Right now, it's a partial interchange. One of the changes in the policy said we consider greater contributions towards projects that have these partial interchanges, or there's a broad regional benefit. There's a major transit component to this Barrington Road interchange. So we are all starting to proceed forward now with an intergovernmental agreement that you'll likely see within the next month or two for the Barrington Road interchange. Tollway contribution on this one will likely be established at 60%. The state of Illinois has increased the contribution to the project, so it's more of a collaborative effort. PACE is bringing some funding to the table. We actually had private landowners, the hospital in the general area, has donated $1 million towards the interchange project to Hoffman Estates. So it's, again, it's, the policy has spurred on this urgency and provided that clarity that was necessary to deliver the project. This one's going to provide some great benefits for us too, operationally. But those are some changes that we saw in the policy that, again, helped move these projects along. Some of the other ones that you'll see, some of the status of other projects you'll see with the coming to the board within the next couple months, which we've talked about these, or I have in the past. A couple updates. I-98 Meacham Road, this is in Schaumburg. We are now proceeding with the governmental agreement. Schaumburg has identified the funding for the project through their own. I-90 at Roselle Road, we're developing our intergovernmental agreement there. That's a partial interchange, Schaumburg and Cook County. Cook County has definitely stepped up to the table because, again, they realized what it was going to take to get the project to move forward. And we're looking at the operations between Meacham, Roselle, and Barrington Roads kind of together.
So looking at these, and I mean, we can certainly go, I know you can go into detail on any one of them, but, you know, I think one of the things that the board, there was a lot of board feedback on, and one thing that actually was changed in the policy based on the board discussion was, you know, prioritizing truck routes, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, off the top of your head, know which of these are truck routes?
Elmhurst Road 83 is a major truck route that goes right into Des Plaines and Elk Grove. That's part of the Elgin O'Hare project. Barrington Road is a commercial route. Irene Road, just by de facto, there's a gravel pit just south of there. There's not many crossings over the tollway through that area, so that is a major truck corridor. It may not be a designated truck route, but it's definitely a major truck corridor. Lee Street is It's really the northern side of the airport. A lot of trucks, cargo coming in.
A lot of new intermodal facilities, I think, going in.
Definitely through there at Lee Street. So that is a truck, a primary truck corridor. And then I-88 to 47 down at the bottom, we just recently executed a letter of intent on that one. That is a, 47 is one of the primary routes in Illinois, north and south routes. That is a truck route, and this is one that was only partial interchange in a truck route. So the provision about commercial vehicles being, you know, kind of a primary selection criteria for us, as well as economic development, is aligned with those projects. Really, the only one that's not is Meacham, and at I-90 Meacham, if you're familiar with that area, that's high, I would call it more of an entertainment retail type of a district view there. That's where the Schaumburg Convention Center is, the Woodfield Mall, many of the jobs in the area, but that's not a truck route because it's not continuous. So definitely, you know, we have been focusing on the trucks and expanded access for trucks through that. So that's another one of those like provisions in the policy.
Here, I think the next slide, we see that the majority of these are meeting our expectations in terms of revenue, right?
Yeah, and so this is really the last slide. So I want to kind of look back to and maybe get some thoughts on, you know, how we can really start evaluating whether or not these projects and the policy is actually being successful. These are projects that we've implemented over the last several years. Obviously, went through a pretty deep recession for a while. It seems to be coming out of that. But these are projects that we've implemented, and what we kind of looked at was to say, okay, how are they performing? The top goals that we have is economic development, operations or congestion reduction, and toll revenue projection. How are we doing on these things? So first two projects, I-90/173 and Riverside Boulevard, they're further north in the north of Rockford area, but those two interchanges really work together. The way we advanced that project, you had a major congestion problem at I-90 Riverside Boulevard. You actually had an interchange that ended at a stop sign, not even a stop light, it was a stop sign through there. So we had some congestion backing up. They were starting to see more economic activity through there. But we increased the toll at the Riverside Boulevard, Toll Plaza, and we built a new interchange at I-90 at 173 and set the toll rates a little bit higher at 173 and increased the tolls at Riverside Boulevard to help us hit this toll revenue projection. With those two combined, it's really hard to figure this out too, because we do projections on what the net revenue impact would be. We don't really know after we build what the net revenue impact is, because we get gross revenues coming out of the toll plaza. We have toll increase in between. But by and large, we're meeting the revenue expectations of hitting that within the 10-year period. From an economic development, if you go out there, you can start seeing some economic development. So, like I said, it meets expectations. You can see economic development, in particular along 173 area, right at the interchange at the state park. So, you won't see economic development there, but if you go a little to the west, you do start seeing the benefits of the project. And development continues to happen, especially along that corridor.
So, any other?
So, you know, I just want to say, you know, Yellow Road, just, you know, Mayor Weisner's, this is an interchange that I know he's very familiar with. This is an interchange that we built in late 2009, early 2010, we opened it up. Economic development, you know, it's definitely an interesting interchange configuration through there. We would say it's kind of marginally meeting economic development expectations at that physical location, but you are experiencing development in and around that area, just not on the land right at the interchange.
Yeah, so, I think what transpired is that in the corridor in that particular area is heavily office, etc. And then this got completed right as the recession hit. And so there was an office glut right at that point that's just starting to reach saturation. And so only now, I think, will we begin to see.
And I think we saw something similar on the 355 South Extension, right, where a lot of communities thought there would be a lot more economic development, but the recession slowed things down. Now they're starting to see development come back on that corridor, too. So
it's hard to track those. But, again, the positive story out of this is we're still, from a total revenue projection, we're going to hit it within a 10 to 15-year time frame, which is still
the new
generally meets our expectations. So that's the positive as far as that goes. Then Balmoral, I would say, you know, across the board, that's really exceeding some of the expectations.
I mean, we paid it off early.
We're doing very well as far as that one goes.
So if there's any other traffic problems here?
We haven't yet.
Even on Thanksgiving, right? Because they also open similar to you know, Farnsworth, they were, you know, open, the outlet mall there was open, and people, for whatever reason, decided to go out on for their early Black Friday, Gray Thursday, whatever they're calling it, sales. And I think we saw it perform pretty well, right?
They, you know, in Rosemont, they're very familiar with, as you can imagine, event management.
Right.
Anytime they have anything major there, they do have their officers controlling the signals. We do have cue detection in the ramps there. Basically, if it starts to line up too far on the ramps, we get the automatic green light and we push our traffic through. That's stuff that we're adding into pretty much all of our ramps now is cue detection. If there's backup onto the shoulder system, we get we green, yeah. But yeah, Rosemont, they've done a good job with that. We'll see. This is the season, I guess, right? Where they're gonna have the Rockettes, I would imagine, are they still around?
Theater. A new batch.
A new batch, I would imagine. Right.
So
they're from the policy, it seems to work. It's provided the clarity. Things are definitely moving forward. Communities have been responsive. The nice thing is with this 8847 interchange project, it's been out there forever. They've been waiting and didn't know how to get anything done. Now they've got the roadmap to get it done. They're off the dime. It's moving forward. They were able to line up their own funding, get state funding for the project. So that's a positive one from our standpoint, from a local standpoint, that you'll start seeing move forward as well. So if there's any other metrics that you'd like us to have us monitor, I guess, to see if these interchanges are performing right, we can, moving forward. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think one of the other positive things is that we can see some of these half interchanges be completed. I think that's useful monitoring.
And all those, well, the ones that on the prior page, except Meacham again, are partial.
And completed without being all on the tollway to complete them, right? I think I had a frustrating driving experience once trying to turn around and briefly toyed with the idea of directing Paul to incorporate the Move Illinois program to full build out on all interchanges, and obviously that would be a pretty costly endeavor for us to do by ourselves, but we can definitely leverage participation and do more than we would otherwise be able to do. So, and Rocco did a nice job.
And cost?
I was running through my head right now. As far as leveraging dollars, let me go to back on these. The I-90 at Elmhurst Road is part of the Elgin O'Hare overall project, so I don't want to give you the cost on that one because it's part of something much bigger. But, you know, the local share of the $300 million.
The share portion of it.
I-90 at Meacham. Schaumburg is about $20 million on that one. We're about that same range as well. We're getting some of the final numbers right now, the way we're approaching Meacham and Roselle. We knew all along we had to take out the bridges through there, so we're covering the cost of replacing the bridge that was there, so they're responsible for the incremental cost of widening the bridges to accommodate the interchange. So it won't be a straight 50-50 because a lot of the costs we were going to have to absorb on our own anyway, that's those incremental costs. So it's about $20 million of Schaumburg dollars for that one. Roselle Road is about that same range too. On that one, again, it follows that same pattern. Barrington Road is about $68 million interchange. It's big, but that's this is a project we're working on with the Department of Transportation. They've increased their contribution towards the overall project to about greater than $20 million. So it's a larger project. It's going to be single point urban diamond interchange, bigger bridge, a wide cross section underneath for we've got some auxiliary lanes that go through, so it's a much larger structure than typical. So that was about $768 million. And Irene Road, relatively low cost, less than 10 on that one because it's rural. They bought the land. They continue to buy the land for us. We've been using the land during construction, so the grading of land is really happening throughout construction projects. We built one ramp for about $3 million. We're building another one in 2014. We'll find out the cost of that one soon, then we're going to work the other one. So we've been able to parse that one out over time. So that's relatively low cost. Lee Street is about $12 million for a eastbound off-ramp, $12 to $15 million range.
Lee Street is not, so at this point, a done
deal. Yeah, that one still has a draft MOU. There's much work to be done on that one. but relatively a low-cost project. And 88 at 47, the cost estimate right now is about $20 million. Again, it's relatively simple. Land has been preserved. That's beneficial for us. So it varies.
We should, we'll send a note out to the board, though, of, you know, how much, we'll do the calculation on for the ones that have been completed, what was leveraged, and then, this, because it's definitely, we cover half the cost. And so then whether it's part, it's typically, some portion is the Illinois Department of Transportation, they often chip in, and then the community, but definitely leveraging more than we'd otherwise be able to do. So we'll.
They're really good numbers to see how it actually has worked. And I've always talked to the theoretical skin in the game. It's there.
And I'll also say that Rocco and his team, and Rocco in particular, have done a really good job of advancing, particularly on this I-90 corridor, trying to get these moving, because obviously now is the time, and planning ahead with the bridge work all along that corridor to make sure that, we're planning and building it to accommodate a future interchange. I will tell you that at one point I was nervous that he was doing too good of a job getting some of these going, but it's, I think, paying off, and it's actually turning out very nicely that getting some of these kind of at least closer to the finish line at the right time to be doing the work, so we're not back out there later disrupting customers and traffic and drivers again, and at a higher cost putting in or completing the interchange.
And that's where, again, the policy has helped too, because it's there's more clarity on what the reimbursement time frame was. Typically it was a matter of, upon award of the contract, we needed 80%.
You should bask in the glory of the accolade that you
received. Thank you very much. But you've provided the path again for people to know how to pay back the project.
Yeah.
And the policy is aligned with their financial needs. It's hard for a community to come up with $15 million, right? So, thank you. That's it.
Thank you very much. Nothing under unfinished business here. Any call for new business? I don't believe so. No need for executive session, therefore I'd entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion.
We would have been sitting here a long time.
Yeah, I can't get here. I'm not long, so I know. But all right, we have a motion to adjourn. So we have a second?
Second.
I guess we do.
Yep.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Very good. Thank you.